Welcome to Power of the Tribe podcast. I'm your host, John Connors. I'm also the founder and head instructor of Connors Martial Arts. We teach Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Muay Thai, kickboxing, and mixed martial arts. So if you want to come and find the inner badass in yourself, come down to our academy here in Norwood or give me a call, send me a message, and we'll help you on your journey. And I'm here with my co-host, Dan Robin. Hey, Dan.
How you doing, John?
Dan, it's February 1st,
yeah.
The day before Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
And Sober January is over.
My long nightmare is over.
Your long cold winter is over.
Right. So I didn't drink a drop all January.
Good for you. So you had a cheat day.
I did drink
scheduled
on the cheat.
You
forgot
did.
About that.
Okay. Because I was going to have a drink with you on cheat day, and we didn't even have the drink on cheat day.
Yeah.
So in my head, I was thinking, Dan might not even cheat on his cheat day.
I could have not drank on the cheat day, but it was just a weird, it was like a office party, and I was like, I already said so.
Company office party.
Yeah, I could have easily not done it, but.
How hard did you cheat on the cheat day?
Yeah, pretty hard.
Okay. It was a cheat day. If you're going to cheat, what the hell, right?
I mean, yeah, it wasn't like one.
Right. Nope. If you're going to foul, really foul. Don't let him get a shot off.
Yeah. The next day, I was like, oh, yeah, this. I forgot about Saturday morning.
Hey, you're going to get called for pass interference. Do not
just
let
level,
the guy catch the
just
ball.
Level. Yeah.
Like the guy on the Rams did to the Saints receiver. And they didn't even get called for it.
Yeah.
You just wiped the guy out.
I was like, just make sure he's not going to catch the ball. That's sort of what I did, yeah.
So how difficult was it? I'm going to guess, I'm interrupting you all the time, I'm so sorry, that it was moderately difficult, not that hard.
I thought it was not hard at all. I thought it wasn't. On the flip side, everyone I mentioned, they go, oh, I tried that and I noticed, and they start rattling off all the effects, you know, like my energy was up,
I
got more done, I was more productive, my head was clearer, I was closer with my family, blah, blah, blah. And I didn't have any of that. Like, as far as I can tell, I cut the alcohol out and there was no other effect.
No effect.
No weight loss, no anything.
Did you have any withdrawals in the first few days or so?
Other than the, you know, the hallucinations and convulsions.
And the projectile vomiting.
And the projectile vomiting. But 3 days of that. And then, no, I didn't.
You didn't
the
have
way I described before, the main effect that I had was, like, I forgot that there was football playoffs all month.
Yes.
And so there'd be a perfect.
And some great games.
Yeah. Like the game on Saturday night, fire in the fireplace.
Mm.
My wife takes out a bottle of wine. You know, your brain starts going, oh, come on.
That
man.
Sounds
you know,
pretty
just
good, Dan.
Just screaming like, what are you doing? But what I was saying is that I found that your body screams at you for like, I'm in it, you know, and then you're fine.
It's over.
You know, it's over, at least for me. So
you may have somehow inadvertently attained enlightenment.
I think
you may be the Buddha.
Happened?
Yeah.
Was Buddha spent a because he did he used to say, I spend a minute being like, oh, I need a beer. And then,
then it's over.
And then it's
I
over.
Think that's how it works. Yeah.
So I found that, not a big. It wasn't too tough. So now the follow-up, though, I think a good plan is, not be like, well, now I'll drink every day, you know. In fact, I'm going to try to do the opposite of that, which is drink less than I was before January. Before it became a habit, you know, if it's Friday night, you're pouring a drink. If it's Saturday night, you're pouring a drink. If you're...
You know, you got to be concerned, too, that to use the analogy of in fighting, there are some guys that can take a punch, and that's how they build the career. They get hit. And they're almost knocked out, and then they come back and knock the other guy out. Eventually, that tends to catch up to those guys, and then their chin is gone, and then they experience more brain damage than somebody who couldn't withstand such a good blow in the beginning.
So you're saying I could withstand take a good alcohol punch.
Right. But if you do that for decades, that can catch up to you.
Yeah.
I know a guy that happened to. He used to drink prodigious amounts. Yeah. He used to come in the bar in the morning before work started, and he would have like two or three beers. And
that's already an issue.
Right. Then he'd go to work, and at lunch he'd have three drinks probably. And then he'd come home and stop at the bar, and he'd probably have eight drinks, a couple shots of blackberry brandy. Then he'd go up to leave the bar, go to the Elks Club, and have three beers there and a couple shots of something. And then on the way home, he'd stop at Lodge's Liquor Store in Rosie Square and get a 12-pack and then stop in at our bar again and have a beer and a shot of something, then go home and drink the 12-pack.
See, I think that's starting to get problematic. I think that's like the warning. I think
that's a little excessive.
Well, you get over, I think, 20 drinks a day, you're probably, you know, I don't know the literature.
I think the guy never
missed
a day of work, and he chewed a lot of mints, I think.
No one can live through that for too long, right? I don't think.
He did decades of it, and then all of a sudden he hit the wall. Yeah. But I think he just stopped alcohol. Like, he went through some serious health issues, but recovered. And just stop drinking. So,
right.
Yeah.
He's even lucky, though, that he lived through it, right? I mean, you can't have too much more than that, right?
Unbelievable. Yeah.
That's like Lemmy from Motorhead, though. He every day would just open a bottle of whiskey, you know, and drink whiskey all day. And he was like, why am I still alive? And then eventually he wasn't.
Then he wasn't.
Yeah.
He didn't have to ask that question anymore. Yeah. I don't think you're that type.
No. First of all, I never drank like that.
Right. Right.
I mean, it's just I could have a lot if I wanted to.
So you are going to tend to dial it back a little bit going forward.
Because why not?
Yeah.
Again, I kind of broke the habit, so now I can... Because a weird thing about booze, too, is that you can feel like Friday night and not drinking, you just... It's not even that you want the drink, right? It's more like I just feel like bored or something without it. You're like, so I'm just going to sit here on Friday night, like not...
I hear you.
Any. And so I broke that habit. So now the habit's broken. I'll try not to go fully back, you know.
Let me ask you, did you have that experience where things were a little less interesting when you weren't having a glass of wine or two?
You know what? It's felt like, for me, it was more like those pangs. Like I'd be like, so even for that, I'd feel like, yeah, this is boring. I need a drink. But it was like a minute, you know. And then like either way, like, what's really the difference sitting and watching a Netflix movie with a glass of wine or not? You know what I mean? Like, you're not like, it's not objectively more interesting a night, you know?
Yeah.
It's both. You're sitting and watching a movie.
I think it could be perceived as more interesting because you sort of lose a little bit of inhibition. So maybe become slightly more open so you can, I don't want to tout the benefits of alcohol. That sounds terrible. But yeah, I mean, sometimes you have that 1.5 drinks. And you're in that kind of little sweet spot. That's the problem with it is.
I think my sweet spot is past 1.5 drinks.
It goes away very quickly, right? Like, and if you, once you go past the sweet spot, then it's not good. And
But that's also what happens, though. If you get into that sweet spot, however many it takes, you don't want to stop because then you're like, it just fades away and you have to fall asleep, you know?
Right.
So you're like, I need to keep feeding this.
Right.
But anyway, so I broke that habit. So I think I'll try to stay. It. I don't want to keep talking about my plans for drinking.
And you're going to do no sweet snacks.
Yeah, for February.
February.
So anyway, this isn't also just about me. I think it's also about talking about strategies and of getting things done. Because I think it's interesting about this is what works for me is I'm going to pick something every month and try to make it as defined as possible. I think the problem is if you say, I'm going to lose weight, that doesn't work for me. I mean, it works a little. You know, I'm going to eat healthy works for me a little bit.
Right.
But what works for me better is, like, this was perfect to say, here's the deal. In January, I'm not drinking alcohol, period. That's real easy for me.
Right.
And then for me mentally, I guess I see it as I can't have any. So it's not, it's sort of like not.
You've pre-decided.
Yeah. It's pre-decided. Yeah. Yeah.
If you have to keep making the decision night after night, that's very difficult.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And if you say, I'm going to cut down on my drinking, you're always making the decision. Right? I hadn't actually thought of it that way, but that's what it is.
Yeah.
You're always making that decision, whereas I make one decision. You know, it's like I'm not having it.
And it's a doable decision because it's only a month.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, you didn't say, if you say, I'm going to cut down for the rest of my life, that's maybe too abstract and too large to get your head around it. But I'm going to cut out for a month completely. That's pretty binary, pretty black and white.
So diet. So now I got to break the sugar thing. So that's what I'm doing for February. No, again, I'm not doing it like you said. Like I'm not gonna say I can't have this juice because there's sugar in it, or this pasta because there's sugar in it. But like actual sugar, because for me, every meal now, lunch and dinner, I'm having sugar. I'm having cookies and candy, and like after every meal.
I think it might be too difficult for somebody to go from having a diet or eating the way you're eating to being super strict and having no processed food, no sugar at all, because your body is going to rebel. You're going to go through withdrawals for sure if you did that. The way you're doing it now, I think you'll probably go through some withdrawals, but it'll be manageable.
I'm hoping it's the same thing. Already for today, I was like...
You had a pang already?
Yeah, pang already. But
what was the situation?
Well, all right. Well, so this is another thing, the way I'm doing it is... So the advice you always hear, and I think it goes with, I want to eat healthier. And it's good advice. So
okay.
I don't wanna, but it's like, well, keep the crap food out of your house.
Definitely. Right?
Okay, so that's not what I'm doing.
Okay.
Because I'm doing something a little different. Like, I think that's good advice for, I want to eat healthier. I'm keeping all my favorite stuff in the house.
Interesting.
Right there.
Staring you in the
staring
face.
Staring me in the face.
Huh.
Because I'm trying to toughen up. I'm doing this a tough way. You know what I mean? I'm sort of like, it's a willpower thing with me.
Yeah, I admire
that. I bought like double stuffed Oreos and Reese's peanut butter cups and all this stuff. And they're on my counter.
Sitting there looking at you.
Yeah.
Calling
just
you.
Just staring at
Damn.
Me.
Damn.
Yeah, exactly. And so
you're
already.
You're not doing what you kind of are. You know, so Odysseus, you know the story of Odysseus and the sirens?
Yeah.
So the sirens would call sailors that came by with their beautiful song, and the sailors would be irresistibly attracted to the sirens, and they would sail toward them, and then they'd wreck their ships and perish.
Why did the sirens do that?
That's kind of what sirens did.
That's just what they did?
Yeah, that's a great question, Dan. I'm not sure. They're obviously maladjusted demigods or whatever the hell they were.
Yeah, they weren't like plundering the ships or anything.
I don't think they were plundering. They might have been plundering.
For the benefit of wrecking the ships.
I'm going to research this.
All right,
I'll get back to you next episode. So what Odysseus did was he wanted to hear the music or the singing. Mm-hmm. So he had his men tie him to the mast and said, don't untie me no matter what. And he had them stuff their ears with wax or something so they couldn't hear it. And then they sailed by the sirens.
Was this a good idea of Odysseus? I guess I could see it. He was like,
I don't know what you're doing. He went berserk. Untie me. Untie me. We get a steer the ship that way, and they completely ignored him until they were safely out of range, and then they could untie him.
But then he was like, that's cool.
He was like, wow.
Was he like, that was awesome?
That was awesome. Yeah, he was out of their spell once he got far enough away.
Although I feel like I might be tied to the mast, and they're like, the sailor's going like, how is it? And be like, it's all right. They're like, how was the singing? It's okay.
I give it a 7.
They were good.
I can picture you, Dan, back in ancient Greece, tied to the mast, and your little shoulder shrug. Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah.
But that's an interesting...
What did Medusa look like? Pretty bad. Pretty bad.
Yeah. I'd give her a 2.
Ugly. She's like a 2. 2 to 3.
But that's sort of an interesting early example of pre-decision, where he's like, I'm going to tie myself in, so I can't act on my temptation no matter what. You know, he sort of tortured himself with it, though.
To be clear, I'm not getting tied up and like with
you're
Oreos
using
around
your,
me.
Your willpower.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
So I'm hoping, but even now I looked at it and my body is, you know, you're so used to certain actions. It's like, just pop one of those double stuff in your mouth, man. Like, you know, just like, it's going to be good. Like, and I'm, but my, again, my mindset is I can't. I think that's sort of critical to what I'm doing too. It's not like,
now, what is the price? What if you had a bad moment and you popped the double stuff in? How would you feel?
I'd feel
like,
would
you tell me?
Yeah.
Would you own up to it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this, I think this is important because, well, that's another thing, that the promise is to myself.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of people get, and I think this is good too, that people get, they're like, you need a trainer or someone like that to be responsible to. You know what I mean? Like
somebody to hold you accountable.
Or a nutritionist or a dietitian or someone that to hold you accountable.
Right.
But that sort of opens a door for lying, right? Like it opens a door for...
It does. And it's a little too passive, I think.
Yeah, I think. But I mean, it helps some people again, so I don't want to...
What I was doing, Dan, when I was running my hill workouts on Sundays, and they were awful, believe me. I did not... Basically, every Sunday, I didn't want to do it. I got in the habit of... I sort of recorded my results, my heart rate and so forth, and I would take a screenshot of that and text it to a couple different guys. So then I felt if I don't do it, then I won't be able to send it to them, and I won't feel good about that.
Right, and they'll be like, yeah, they'll know you didn't do
it. So they weren't really holding me accountable. They didn't say, if you don't send this, I'm going to bust your chops. But I created that dynamic in my own head.
You were still holding yourself accountable, but it right. was to send them.
Yeah, I was using them as a device, but it was all initiating from me. It was my idea, right. the whole thing.
So that's sort of, I mean, that could help me too, or like even this, I'll be like, I feel really stupid getting on the podcast going, I broke the, you know. Because I also
a little
sort
more
of
pressure to help you,
pride yeah. myself in some way of being like having willpower, you know, and being like, I'm not breaking it, you know, I'm not going to do it. To me, come on, I feel silly to be like, I did it. And for what? Like, I couldn't resist a double stuffed Oreo?
For a moment of pleasure.
Yeah, it's just like
double stuffs are pretty good. Yeah.
They are pretty good.
I had one of our students come to me and he said, I'm having trouble coming in and training. Is there some way you could hold me accountable? And I was a little annoyed. I'm like, you're a grown-ass man. We're here 7 days a week, morning, noon, and night. What the hell?
What you should do is they sign a thing that I can charge you $100 if you miss a week.
If you don't come in, yeah. Well, what I did do is I sent him my screenshot of my workout, and I explained what I was doing to hold myself accountable. And you know what he said?
What?
Nothing. He get back to me. Like, completely ignored my message, which is disappointing. Yeah,
that was me trying to hold you accountable.
Yeah.
Does he still train?
No. So, I mean, he's a wonderful guy. I think his challenge is he's one of these people who has a very open personality. So he's into a lot of different things. I think he has a very fun and enjoyable life, but he wants to do this. But, I mean, he's got to take some responsibility himself. So I think these accountability mechanisms are helpful, but you really got to step up yourself and do it. Like, really take a more active role. I see it sometimes people just join a gym and they spend a little money and they're trying to make that some kind of accountability mechanism, and that doesn't work either. Sometimes people just spend the money and they think they've done something in their mind. Well, I signed up. That's the first step. And then they have to take the other
steps. Where, like, you know, I said, I'm signed up for 6 months. So then I thought, now I'm going to have to show up. And I blew off probably 4 months. Not at your gym, but at another one where
That definitely happens.
I don't want to go here anymore, and I don't care that I spent the money, you know.
Totally agree.
So it doesn't work.
Your accountability is your own self-respect. Your own inner audience is going to judge you, and you don't want to disappoint your inner audience.
Yeah, and I was thinking how, like, I just a month ago or a couple months ago, I saw an old friend from high school who I really I'd fallen out of touch with. I haven't seen in a long time. And he was talking about me with some other of the high school kids, and he was like, it was with some current people who had never met me.
So he was talking to some people who have never met you.
Yeah, like his brother-in-law. Yeah. And he was like, this guy talking about me from high school. Yeah. And he was like, I never met anyone with a willpower like this guy. Huh. Like, no one had his iron willpower. And as he was saying it, I was like, no one would say that about me now. You know, I just felt no one would say I have a weak will, but they'd say no one thinks that.
And was there some event that he was basing that on?
I can't remember what he's basing it on. Like, I must have done something.
You did a sober January when you were a freshman
in high school.
I was
thinking of things I did in high school, but he didn't even know I did it. So I don't know how he knows that. Like, I remember, so my sophomore year, I'll give you an
example. You got a lot of fans out there, Dan. You don't even know it.
My sophomore year of high school, I read some harebrained thing about how, of all, like, the teenage examples, it was like you can get acne, and it was like chocolate and Coke. Which I think there's no
chocolate and Coca-Cola give you acne.
Yeah, I think I don't think there's any truth to that, right? But
I don't know.
I think when I was 14, I read that somewhere.
Probably is not helping to have too much processed food. It probably gives you general information.
It can't help. Yeah. But I read that somewhere when I was like 14 years old, or heard it or something like that. And I said, I'm never touching either of those things through a cola or chocolate.
You're out.
For high school. And I never, and then I think that bled over into college, so I went 4 or 5 years of my life without touching either thing.
How was your skin?
Not great. But maybe it would have been worse, I don't know.
Interesting.
But then I think I didn't tell anyone when I did that, so he didn't know I did that. He must have some other example.
Well, you're a very conscientious guy, I think, Dan. Yeah, you do have a strong will. That's impressive.
But I feel like I haven't used it in a while, so that's part of what I'm doing.
Can I ask you, does your wife enjoy the same snacks that you do?
Well, she tries to eat healthy.
She tries. In general, eats a little more healthy than you.
Yeah, we have a lot more healthy than me.
Yeah.
And And there's that sort
of. So that box of double stuff, it's all Dan's, and it's sitting there.
Yeah, maybe my kids.
The kids a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they might, they'll be happy now, that I'm not eating it.
If you didn't fall through, like you had a weak moment, you had a double stuff, would you feel bad that Lucy would note that, would she would see it? Your wife would see, Dan didn't make it. Would that make you feel bad?
I think she'd be very surprised. I don't know if she'd judge me or not. But I don't even
but
think
what, how would you feel about it?
I don't think there's any chance of it happening.
Right.
If that makes sense. I guess how would I feel? I mean, maybe this illuminates my mindset, but I'm like, but it's not going to happen.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? I'm not going to have it. When I was doing this no alcohol thing, like maybe if 2 days in for January, I said, I drank, you'd know I wasn't serious. But by week two, you knew I wasn't going to have any, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, I was pretty confident because I know you pretty well that you were going to fall through.
Yeah. So I'm
just trying to tease out the motivations.
The only thing I don't like about my goals for February is I like real concrete. Like for January, it was like no booze except this one day, period.
That's pretty clear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now I kind of, no sugary snacks, fine. But then I sort of said, well, I also don't want to be eating potato chips. And so I sort of left it. It's like sort of unclear.
Let's figure it out right now. What do you think?
Well, the thing is, it's not going to be pure eating healthy because I'm going to Florida for a week.
I think you should just do the no sugary snacks, right? That's pretty clear, right?
Yeah.
And then you can keep the potato chips and whatever.
Yeah.
And then you can, you can enjoy Florida without having double stuffed Oreos, I think.
Yeah, and just having pizza or chips and dip and whatever.
Yeah.
Booze.
There's plenty of sugar, man. Catch up all that
stuff. I'm going to add one more thing, too. So these are, everything we're talking about is denying yourself something, right?
You sound like Will Ferrell in Elf. Like, he puts maple syrup on spaghetti.
Well, that counts. So I can do that. I just thought of that, right? Like, I can put the maple syrup on spaghetti. That's technically not it. So all this is denying yourself for willpower, but I'm going to add on also doing something, which is like making sure I run at least 4 days a week.
So this is for February.
Yeah.
You're going to run 4 days a week and no sugary snacks.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty good.
If I don't lose weight this month, that's going to be weird. Then I'm going to be like, all right, nothing affects me no matter what I do.
I think that's a recipe to lose weight. Yeah. I would be very surprised if you did not lose weight on that protocol.
So I weighed myself today, so I'll check in. I'll be
honest.
What
did you weigh?
It was 188.
188. Okay. My prediction for March 1st is 183.5. Do you have a prediction?
No, that's a pretty good prediction, I guess. I guess like 187. But I think, I don't know. We'll see. I also think, though, that, that week in Florida is not going to help me, because even if I don't have sugary snacks.
But you still get the runs in.
Yeah.
You maybe do a fifth run in Florida. I mean, it's going to be nice weather, right?
Yeah. So,
where in Florida?
Naples.
Where is that?
West Gulf Coast. So,
nice.
South of Tampa.
South of Tampa.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be great, right?
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah.
So, it'll be beachy, but I'll be lazing around and boozing around. And the only thing... I should have less, too, because I've said before, sometimes these vacations, you can be like, you pop open the beer, and maybe people don't mind this, but sometimes I'm on the plane going back going like, I was just in this like boozy haze for a week. Like, maybe people like that for a vacation, but that sort of annoys me sometimes where I'm like, what kind of vacation was that? I just sort of, it's like, how was it? Like, I don't know. It was all sort of this drifting, hazy time. I think some people actually, now that I'm saying it, that's what they want from a vacation, but.
Yeah, that can
like some...
that can make you feel a little gross.
Yeah,
pretty quick, right?
Yeah, at least intersperse like moments of like, we traveled here. I went and saw the alligators and all that kind of stuff.
That's where the runs will help you, getting a little workout in.
Yeah, clear my head.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what does work for me, Dan, is the environment. So yeah, if I don't have stuff in my house, it just goes better.
That's
for
longer term, right? You see what I'm trying to do, though, that's different than that, right?
Yeah.
Like, mine's about willpower.
Right.
Like, if the goal is I just want to lose the weight, then I get it out of my house, right?
Right.
Because what's the point then? But I'm also testing myself. I want to stare at the thing every day and be like, I mean, I don't know. I'd feel terrible if I was like, I couldn't resist the Oreo. Like, it's like how weak will, like, what are you, five?
Get defeated like, by could, the Oreo. Yeah,
I had to have a Reese's peanut butter cup. It's like, what are you, 5 years old? Just like, be a man. Like, have a little willpower. So I can't imagine.
It's like that scene from The Godfather where he smacks the singer, Johnny, whatever. Yeah. He says, he's crying. Yeah. What can I do, Godfather? And he says, you can act like a man. And slaps him.
Exactly.
That, I don't know why he gets such a kick out of that scene, but yeah.
That's how I meant. That's mentally what's going on to myself when I'm looking at the Oreos. And
I run that like, scene on myself. Yeah. when I'm not acting like a man. I know that's totally politically incorrect right now to say act like a man.
Yeah.
Ridiculously so. But I throw that on myself occasionally.
But anyway, you said this before about, what was it, eating birthday cake or something. Or,
yeah.
I should eat less birthday cake. You're like, why are you eating birthday cake? You're a grown man.
Yeah.
I said that about some of the things I eat when they're caught, like in the name of it, is like ring ding. I'm like, this is not aimed at people my age. If ding is in the name at all. You know, doodle, right. Doodle is in the name of the food. It's not aimed at an adult.
Right. If the food has a cartoony name, you probably shouldn't be eating it.
And it shows
man.
Like a cartoon eating it. Yeah. It's probably.
If it has a little rabbit or something involved.
So anyway, that's where I'm at. So we'll see.
So you're basically cutting out cartoon food.
Cartoon food is out.
For February.
Yeah.
And four runs a week.
Yeah. That's doable.
That's totally doable. That'll be very good for you.
Here's another downside, though, is that it'll be hard to do five runs a week, though. I thought of that already because if I run Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I'm going to be like, well, I'm done. You know what I mean? Like, it'll be hard to get up and go. I think. We'll see. You know, but
I do slightly differently. So my approach is a little different than yours. I have a different personality, I guess. I will sometimes say I'm going to do it every day, and then I'll end up doing it four times a week.
And I see what you mean.
If I set out to do it four, then sometimes I end up doing it once or twice. It just slips. So I need a different
approach.
I think
in general, my approach is the same as yours. You know, be like, I'm going to go every day, and then you don't, and then you still go enough.
I've been pretty much Wim Hofing every day. I have a little book, a little journal where I write it down. That seems to help me too. A little prop to make sure I get it done.
The thing that's changed for me is this month by month approach. Where I'm like, I have to do it, and I'm going to do it.
That's good.
You can't do that forever, though. I can't. You know what I mean? I can't be like 4 days a week forever. You know, it's just not sustainable.
Oh, yeah, it gets boring too, right? You got to switch things up, right?
Yeah. So I can do month by month. It's different for me. Where now I'm saying these minimum amounts. I think it'll work. We'll see. But I remember we talked about how we had the same approach for lifting weights, where it was like, you have to have some goal of like, next week I want to be a little strong. You know, you have to see progress or keep track of something.
Oh, right.
Lately, again, I haven't been doing that, where it's now I'm back to drifting around, work out here and there. But if I want to actually get stronger, I have to do that, where I'm like, next week I'm going to add 5 pounds, or next week I'm going to add 10 pounds, or, you know, I have to.
Yeah. You even have to trick yourself where, well, I'll do a slightly lighter weight, but way more reps or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to find some metric that you can push forward a little bit.
Yeah, I need some measurement, so as opposed to like I'm just gonna all work out and see, you know, just sort of loose. Otherwise, or you know, that works for a while, but then you drift away.
Definitely.
Or a goal, you know, a measurement or a goal.
Should I tell you a little bit what I've been doing in my life?
Sure.
I haven't been doing a monthly goal thing, but I've been just getting more order into my life. So more, somebody wrote a book, I think it's called Essentialism. And then there's another really popular book now, The Joy of Tidying Up by Marie
Kondo.
Kondo. Yeah. She's got a TV show on
Netflix.
Yeah, that's
a big thing now, right?
I tried to watch the TV show. It was awful.
It didn't.
She goes
like
in to see people who are a little cluttered, and she fixes them up. It's almost like The Dog Whisperer. But not as interesting. I couldn't get through an episode. Yeah, she's just tidying people's shelves up. I don't know how people can watch it. But so I've been doing that. So I've now been making my bed every day, which is very good for me. I just feel I can think more clearly, and I've been eliminating things. even in my kitchen, I have a big island, like Granite Island, and I had like a lot of stuff on it, you know, stuff for you to put it down. I got rid of everything except for my laptop right now, and I'm getting so much more work done. It's like, that's what it's for. And
right. Just and clearing all the crap out.
Yeah. Yeah. If an object doesn't have a purpose for me, I'm trying to get rid of it. And I really like it. I've been much better at everything since I started this process. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that too, because my parents are the opposite. They're like, every square inch of surface.
Right.
And that has to have something on it. Mm. Like a little statue and a little.
It's maddening.
Yeah. And it covers everything.
Right.
And
it clouds your brain.
I think it does.
Totally does.
So, yeah, I sort of went the other direction where I like to just clear everything out.
Yeah.
You could even have, like, here's a thing in the corner where I put a bunch of crap on it, like a decorative thing or something.
Right. But that has a purpose, to decorate the room.
Right.
It's just not like, let's cover every horizontal surface with some tchotchke or some nonsense piece of paper or something, you know?
Yeah. Is that working? You think you're helping clear your mind?
Absolutely. Yeah. Been way more effective, even though I almost showed up late today. But yeah, everything's getting better. Yeah, definitely. What else have I been doing? I've been ending my showers with 2 minutes of ice cold shower.
Oh, you've been doing that?
And
you do ice cold?
Yeah, I flip it to as cold as it can while there's still water coming out for 2 minutes. I time it with my phone.
Is not misery for you? You've got used to it?
It's getting easier and easier and easier. Yeah. Yeah, it's good. For me, the phone is good, though. It would be harder to do it because I have 2 minutes set up on my clock, and I hit the button, and I'm like, and then I got to turn around and make it cold.
Yeah.
So once I hit the button, it's like jumping out the plane. It's go time.
Right. Yeah. But you don't suffer now. You say it's not suffering. It's just...
It's a little bit. Yeah, no, it's not super. I'm not at Craig Lewin's level yet, you know. It's like... But it's an exercise, sort of like you're doing with the double stuffs. It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you see, by the way, how much Craig Lewin swims? I saw some like Facebook updates, and it was like, it's a light month, and it was 100,000 yards, something like that. Like,
that's impressive.
It was 2.5 miles a day, something like that.
Interesting.
And miles a day for the month for 31 days.
You should do that in March.
He says he'll go to. He says, "Yeah, maybe I'll do that. Maybe I'll swim 2.5 miles a day." He said other months it'll be twice that, 4 or 5 miles a day. Every day, miles.
He's like a fish.
Yeah, that's...
That's impressive. Someday I'll be there. No, I won't. But someday I'll actually learn how not to sink to the bottom of the pool.
Yeah. I mean, swimming 1 mile is really, really...
I would love to be able to swim 2 miles. Not every day, but just
do you know how many laps that is?
Yeah.
I think it's like a million. I don't know. It's like, it's a lot.
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
So I had my epiphany this week, Dan, and I want to talk to you about it because I basically have some epiphany every week, and then I forget about it 2 weeks later, even though it's a life-changing epiphany.
You want to try to remember those.
I want to try to remember them.
Yeah.
And I think it was a little bit stimulated in regards to that Peter Thiel question we had that we're going to start asking everybody, Dan, every guest that comes in. That's the first thing I think we should ask them because it'll get
I know the question you're going to say. It's hard, though.
That's why. Well, we'll give them the question a week ahead of time.
That's what I think, because I think otherwise most of the answers will be, I don't know,
you know, right
on the spot.
So what is the question? It's like, what truth do you hold that most people don't believe in?
Right.
Something to that effect. And what I came to this week is that all emotions have a productive purpose. So you hear a lot today that we got to be happier, people are depressed and anxious, and everybody's getting, there's a book out, 10% Happier, Here's How to Be Happy. Happy, happy, happy. It's like happy is the only thing that has any value. Anything else is not good. And when I had this realization, I felt a lot better.
Happier.
I felt happy. No, I just felt, I had a year of ups and downs. You know, I was living with somebody, had a very serious relationship, living with them for 2.5 years, and it ended very abruptly. So that caused all sorts of negative emotions and frustrations and so forth. And then I realized, and I had heard Dr. Doug Lyle, who has the Evolutionary Psychology podcast, Beat Your Genes, he talked about grief and sadness. And he said the evolutionary purpose of sadness is to make us stop and reflect on our past actions and behaviors and learn from that.
Right.
So in other words, a Stone Age parent is down by the river and one of their kids goes over near some rocks or something and gets eaten by a crocodile. So then they start grieving, and the evolutionary purpose of the grieving is so they can say, oh, maybe we should not go near those rocks. That's a dangerous spot. And you learn from
the experience. I don't want to go through that again.
We don't want to go through this again. Because if you didn't have all that pain and that grief, you could keep making these mistakes and then you would no longer exist and you wouldn't survive and replicate and so forth. So that's a positive, productive purpose for sadness and grief. So I thought about that, and that was very helpful for me.
That's just interesting. That notion. So the obvious logical extension is if you beat your grief,
so if you don't have
go through the process, and you, you know, like if you follow advice to somehow stop the grief and feel good, you could make the same mistakes again and again and again.
Right.
Because you didn't learn the lesson.
You didn't do a postmortem, so to speak, and analyze what led up to the negative event. So I think what I did with this idea is that, oh, I'm sad. Why am I sad? What happened? Let me reevaluate my behavior and activities and decisions I made leading up to the event. And once I feel like I've learned most of what's learnable in the event, I can let that sadness go a little bit. I know it's not that easy, but I think there's something to that. Then you don't have to carry the sadness forward, and it doesn't have any of these social implications and so forth. And then for anger, the evolutionary psychological basis for anger is, this is how he described it. If I feel like you've done some injustice to me, Dan, for example, and I get angry at you, and I express my anger to you, it's intended to provoke a feeling of guilt in you, and then you'll feel like compensating me for my loss. So it's a way to resolve conflict, and it's a way to get some sort of justice. So if I'm mad at somebody, and I express it to them, and they compensate me for the injustice, that's great. But if I'm in a situation where I'm mad, but there's no way I can get any compensation out of it, then it's no longer productive and I can let it go. And also, I think anger and frustration are stimulating. So they energize you. You know, when you're mad, you're like, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore. Yeah. So then I want to just take that energy and apply it in a productive area. So then all these emotions, anger, sadness, grief, frustration, they all have productive purposes. And happiness has a productive purpose. Happiness just marks, oh, this is really good. I want more of this. I want to repeat this. So, you know, one emotion isn't better than another. They all have their purposes. And we can use them for what they're intended for and our purpose and not languish in them and stew in them.
Right. But that's an important last thing you said, right? Though they can get unhealthy, right? Like you said, the example, you're angry and you're sitting there by yourself.
And there's no way to get any justice, any compensation. So that's probably something you don't want to hang on to. You want to take that energy and do something productive with it. But I think if you have this framework intellectually, it can help you navigate all these different emotions. And then it makes things realistic because, you know, we live in, especially around here, Dan, a really wealthy community. And people can get a little nutty trying to be happy and then start worrying, why am I not more happy and happy? And they get too obsessed with this pursuing this perfect happiness, which I think is unrealistic. And it's not how life works.
Right. And you hear a lot of people, it's extremely common now, that suffer from different forms of anxiety, adults and even up to our age. And, you know,
some article about, I think, women over 40 or 35, some percentage in the United States that are on anti-anxiety prescriptions. It's really a big deal. Yeah.
Yeah. And I hear about it with my kids in school, a lot of high school kids. And you don't hear about it because, you know, they don't advertise that, but some really high percentage have anxiety issues there too.
Yeah. So what is the purpose of fear? I'm afraid of something. Oh, it's marking a risk of loss of some sort. So once you can identify the loss and the risk of loss, then you can move forward with that, you know? So if I have a fear of heights and I go indoor rock climbing and I put on this auto belay, I'd say, oh, I'm afraid I'm going to fall and kill myself and not survive. But wait a minute, it's virtually impossible for that to happen with this thing. That intellectual examination of the negative emotion can help me overcome it and move on and so forth.
Yeah. So do you think there's still room for people to be guided through this, right? Like, so if they have, if they're suffering from anxiety, they need to examine why.
I think if you examine why, what is the theoretical positive outcome for this? How's this anxiety trying to protect me? And, you know, accept that protection and then try to move on. I'm sure it's not that easy for everybody, you know?
Sure. But that's the broadest point. You're saying any emotion you're feeling, you should try to understand what it's doing for you.
What's the productive purpose of this emotion? Definitely. Instead of just immersing yourself in the emotion. I had some funny stories, Dan, about the anger prompting compensation. Years ago, I had this car, and it was an old car, and the suspension was finally dead on this thing, and I knew it. It was making all kinds of crazy noises, and it felt like it was just going to fall apart. But I didn't want to buy a new car, but I knew I was going to have to invest a lot of money to fix the suspension on this car. And I brought it right here to Direct Tires in Norwood, and I brought it in, and they looked at it. I was just frustrated and mad in general that I had to spend this money that was like $2,000 that it didn't really, wasn't that easy for me to spend at that time. And they knew I had the martial arts gym a block away, the MMA gym a block away. And they fix my car, and I go to pick it up, and the manager comes out, and he goes, I understand you're really angry with us. You're really upset. And I wasn't angry with them at all. They're terrific people, and they do great work. But I was just generally angry. I must have had the scowl on my face. So he turned around and gave me like $500 off the bill because I had this stupid scowl on my face. And I was dumbfounded because I wasn't expecting any discount and it didn't matter at all. I still thought they were doing good work. I thought it was probably a fair price. What do I know? And that scowl saved me $500. So then that was years ago.
So now
ago.
You're scowling.
Now I try to scowl as much as possible whenever I bring my car anywhere.
I'm picturing you when he's saying that, you know, he's like, I know you're really mad. And you started saying like, no, I'm not. And he's like, so we're going to take $500 off. And you're like, yeah.
Damn right I am. So then I came up with this other concept, Dan, called strategically disagreeable, where I would be kind of getting the short end of the stick and it didn't really make me upset, but I would pretend to be a little upset just to get a better deal.
Yeah.
So I was in New York and we were staying at this hotel. And after the end of the day, we came home and we said, oh, let's turn on Netflix. We wanted to watch some show. And, you know, they touted they had Netflix and Netflix wasn't working in a room. And I called down and they go, oh, yeah, it's not working right now. Oh, all right. Forgot about it. Went to bed. The next night, same thing. Netflix isn't working. And I called down and they go, oh, yeah, it hasn't been working in a long time. So they kind of were not truthful the day before. So then I called back and I wasn't angry, but I said, you know, I'm really, really angry about this. What are you going to do for me? How are you going to make this better? They said, oh, I noticed you just ordered room service. We won't charge you for the room service. So I got like $75, I think, out of this expressing some anger. And I wasn't really angry. But, you know, they were not fulfilling their end of the bargain by not having the Netflix. But my old agreeable self wouldn't have said anything. And I would have missed out on getting a little bit of a benefit.
You probably would have taken that exchange in the first place, right? Like free room service for Netflix.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you had the option.
So that's another little tip for our listeners. If you're very agreeable, don't do this if you're disagreeable because you're walking around angry enough. But if you're an agreeable person and you're kind of getting the short end of a transaction, you don't have to get angry, but pretend you're angry. Demonstrate some anger and ask for compensation and you're going to get compensated almost all the time. Most of the time.
Yeah. I've told you that I see it a little bit of it in the gym.
How's that?
Where me being extremely agreeable.
And what happens
and
with you?
It's not been an issue, but people immediately take a role. Like if I'm very friendly,
right?
They'll start talking in a tone of like, sort of like, oh, here's what you want to do for that move. Or, you know, in charge role where I'm like, that's not what
okay.
I'm... You know what I mean? Like,
so they assume they're socially superior to you in a status place because you're agreeable.
Yeah.
That's
annoying. If I'm sort of, or self-deprecating, like we talked about, and then suddenly someone's talking to you in a tone where I feel like, what? Where is this? This is not. Where is this tone coming from? You misread me. Like,
I've learned it from my own experience lately that self-deprecating humor, you got to be careful with that. Because a lot of people out there aren't sophisticated enough. I love your self-deprecating humor, Dan. It's hilarious. But some dummies out there don't understand it, and they misinterpret it, and they think, oh, you're beneath me now because you're using self-deprecating humor. Yeah.
There's not been anything huge or anything.
No.
About, you know, but it's
little
been
social
but just
things,
little
right?
annoying things.
Right.
I'm sure they don't even know they're annoying me. It's sort of unfair to them in a way that I'm walking away kind of annoyed with them and they don't even know what they did.
They don't get it. Yeah. I think, unfortunately, in general, it doesn't pay to self-deprecate in any way. The only time it pays is when you're clearly in charge. If you're the president of the company, you're the man on stage, you're the CEO, whatever, then you can throw a little self-deprecation
in.
Yeah,
if you're a comedian and
because it's
an auditorium.
Yeah, you're balancing it with all these other signals of superiority, so it works out.
Yeah, I think so.
Interesting. Well, Dan, that was another great podcast. Thank you very much, man.
Cool.
So what did we learn? Let's recap. Let's summarize. We learned that you're doing a no sweet snacks and 4 days a week for February of running.
Yeah.
And you're actually going to be staring at a box of double stuff.
That's sort of the weird part about it.
That is weird.
I'm leaving the stuff that I want right on my counter.
Because you're hardcore, man.
Yeah, exactly.
You are hardcore. And we also learned that all emotions have some productive purpose. And if we can recognize that, it'll probably help us. Oh, and then that we can be strategically disagreeable to get discounts on auto repair.
Or a lot of things.
A lot of, service. Yeah. Awesome, man.
And be careful with being self-deprecating humor.
Oh, right. That's an important
one. Or at least offset it.
All right, folks. Thank you for listening. Please share this. Please subscribe. Please review us. We got at least 7 reviews right now. Thank you guys for reviewing us. And we'll see you next week.